Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Welcome. It's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Mark Trencher, although I know he doesn't go by the title Rabbi, but I think we can give him that honor. Ernst Micha, it's really a pleasure to have him back. I think he's doing amazing work in our community. He spoke last year on one of his research, you know, the research he's doing. He is the founder of Nishma Research, which has now done 12 broad communal studies and 12 organizational studies in the last, you know, 6 years, basically on the range of issues facing us as Orthodox Jews and the wide range of the Orthodox community. Before, you know, he got into this, which is a labor of love. He does this really because he's caring for the community. He headed the research department at two Fortune 200 financial firms, taught statistics at three universities, and he's active in his in the Jewish community, as you heard. We're talking in West Hartford, serving on the Bat Nakashu, president of the shul, and really doing important work for the community at large. And it's a pleasure to welcome him. Today is part one, where we'll discuss the Orthodox community in general, where we're going, the challenges we face. And next week, we'll get into the report that just came out less than 2 weeks ago, I believe, on the financial, you know, issues facing our community, how much people earn and spending and what it costs to be an observant Jew today in America. And that's in the United States. We'll get to Canada at some other time. Bakasha, Dr. Trencher.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. Thank you. So we spoke last time about a little bit more than a year ago. It was in October 2020. I don't know how many people who are here today attended that program as well. The title was a little bit similar, so some of what I'll talk today might sound familiar. I did throw in a lot of additional information. We have done many broad communal surveys. I've done a few surveys. I've done 6 shul surveys and a few other organizations, but I really find your average shul does not really have a director of market research. So there's nobody really who's pushing for research in a shul or even in a small organization. So I decided to shift my focus to broad communal studies of the entire Orthodox community, and asking the right questions. My hope is that that people in the community and in organizations can read the research and can learn from it. All of my research is available, completely transparent. I make everything available. If you go to Nishma, N-I-S-H-M-A research.com, you'll find everything. You'll find for the study that Rabbi Kelman just mentioned about the finances of Orthodoxy, you'll find the full report, a summary report, a press release. You'll find an article in the Times of Israel. You'll find what I'm particularly proud of is I finally got the Jewish Press, which is a very prominent New York area Haredi Yeshivish Hasidish newspaper, to cover it on their first page. So that's my goal. My goal is to share with the community. This is my 7th year doing this, and so it's kind of my Shemitah year, the sabbatical year. So I made a decision that as I mentioned to you, Rabbi, last week, anything I do this year, I am doing completely as a volunteer. I don't take any funding for anything. So if you're able to get a survey together of your community this year, you can get it done free, which the OU or Pew Research probably would not be able to do. Anyway, so I've done, just going quickly through some of the surveys that you might be interested in. The first one I did was a survey of people who've left Orthodoxy, people who went off the derech, so to speak. I got close to 900 people. I did in 2017 a very, very broad survey, 4,000 modern Orthodox Jews, covering just a wide, wide range of questions. I found that Pew had 300 modern Orthodox, but they don't really ask the questions that are of interest to us. So if you look at the Pew survey and you say, okay, what did the people in the Pew survey say about the cost of education? You won't find it. It's not even a question that was on their agenda to ask. So the questions we ask, now, where do I get the questions we ask? Every question I get, I approach people in the community. I always get an advisory group, rabbis, educators, lay leaders, even a few researchers, and I say, I'm doing a survey on how we Orthodox Jews confront the challenges of interacting with society, with secular society. What do you want to know? And people say to me, you know, I want to know, how is that working out for us? I mean, do you face challenges? Do you confront the challenges? Do you give in? If your boss asks you to stay late on a Friday for a meeting, do you give in or do you stand strong in your belief? So basically, all of the questions come from the community. I have never turned down a question. I've never heard a question that I thought to myself, you know, I better not ask it because I'm not sure I'd be able to share the findings with the community. My goal is to share everything transparently, so we do accept all the questions. I'm very proud of the fact that in 2019, I did the first survey of Baalei Teshuvah, people who grew up not Orthodox and became Orthodox, and their journey. What was their journey like? And where do they stand today as opposed to when they became Orthodox? That had not been done in the past. I'll cover a little bit of that today. I did do two political surveys. One is kind of a horse race.
Here it is.
One of the surveys was kind of a horse race. Who are you going to vote for? But the one that I find more interesting, I did a survey the day after the U.S. presidential election. I asked, who did you vote for and why? No judgment. I just want to know, people who voted for Trump, why? What were their priorities? People who voted for Biden, what were their priorities? So I'm not going to cover that today because, right, people actually don't have that much of an appetite for politics these days. Finally, I did three surveys dealing with the coronavirus. How are people doing? The most recent one was vaccine issue, attitudes towards vaccine. The only thing I'll say before we move on to the body of this of today's presentation is the very last study I did on COVID was sponsored by an organization called Hatzalah. Some of you might be familiar. Hatzalah is the largest private ambulance service in the United States. And through them, we were able to actually get, we were able to actually get 3,000 Haredi responses. We actually got 2,000 Hasidish people to respond to the survey. I mean, can you imagine 500 Satmar Hasidim, 500 took the time to respond to an online survey, a 15-minute online survey in English, and it told us what they think. I just saw a report this morning that talked about the internet in the Haredi community. So if you hear it doesn't exist, and if you hear everyone has kosher phones, that's not the whole story. Actually, the internet is permeating the Haredi world as well. So going on to today's presentation. So this is what I want to do is I want to briefly introduce, since the focus of today's presentation is on modern Orthodoxy. I gave a presentation in Cincinnati and they said to me, Mark, talk Friday night about who owns modern Orthodoxy. I said, who owns it? What do you mean? What does that even mean? They said, yeah, figure it out. Tell us what do the words who owns modern Orthodoxy mean? And then tell us who owns it. So I thought I would share a little bit of what I did at that time. A few comparisons of modern Orthodoxy to the Haredi world. I mentioned the Baalei Teshuvah. I'll talk a little bit about that is an important trend. How many Baalei Teshuvah, how many people are modern Orthodox today that did not grow up modern Orthodox? The number is actually surprising and astonishing. I'll talk a little bit about, I mentioned I did a survey of people who leave Orthodoxy. Why do people who grow up modern Orthodox leave? So now we're talking about comings and goings. The transition in the community. Within Orthodoxy, are people moving to the left, moving to the right? Basically, it's in continuing flux. And finally, I'll talk about, I mentioned the question that was asked about Torah Umada, Orthodox Jewry interacting with secular society. We're Orthodox observant Jews, but we also embed ourselves in secular culture. How is that working out for us? If we have time at the end, I do have a list of close to 20 what I call challenges and opportunities that I may go through very, very quickly, very quickly. So the world Jewish population is 15 million, of which about 7 million live in the U.S., about 400,000 in Canada. Interestingly enough, the percentage of Orthodox Jews in Canada is actually higher. It's about 17% of Canadian Jews are Orthodox compared to about 12% in the U.S., looking at modern Orthodox, if you take the total modern Orthodox, it's about 850,000 in the U.S. I used to say you can take all of the modern Orthodox and fit them in 5 football stadiums on a Sunday and people kind of rolled their eyes. But I will tell you this, for every modern Orthodox, and I'm telling you this just to give you the understanding of how small we actually are. For every American modern Orthodox Jew today, there are almost two transgender people in the United States today. So that's a group that outnumbers us by 2 to 1, which on the one hand, you could say we didn't realize there were that many transgender Jews, like 0.7% of the population. But on the other hand, we are like very small. The modern Orthodox is like 0.3% of the American population. So we are very small. I know that we interact with each other on a day-to-day basis. We see each other in classes like this and in shul and in schools. And we get the impression that we're large, but we're actually a lot smaller than people might think. So I've used the term Torah Umada, which most of you might be familiar with. It's a term that has been around in various forms for over 100 years. Rabbi Lam at Yeshiva University first got the term very popularly used. Torah Umada. Torah Umada means that we are the group. Modern Orthodox is the group in American Jewry that's unique, even though we're very small, even though we're only 4% of the Jews. We're very small. We're very unique because we combine Torah observance, and I'll talk about how observant we are, but we combine Torah observance with interaction with secular culture. You know, not like the Haredi, so a Satmar Chassid will interact with secular culture because he has to make a living and he will limit his interactions, limited. But we believe Mada means knowledge, secular knowledge. So Torah Mada means that I consult the Torah, but I also consult science. I appreciate science, physics, there are challenges. Astronomy, there are challenges. Biology, there are challenges. And all these areas of science actually do present challenges to traditional Torah belief, as is taught in many schools these days. Torah Umada has come to mean combining Torah belief with secular culture. So somebody once said, you know, the Rav thought that Torah Umada means that you learn Gemara during the day and then you learn philosophy at night. Today it means you go to a shir at Shalashidis and Shul, and when Shabbos is over, you go to the movies and see a Bruce Willis movie. Okay, now, that's a little bit of a strange view, but that's people like their interaction with not just secular knowledge, but also with secular culture. So we are actually the only group in which that's okay. It's not always lauded. It's not always exemplary behavior, but we accept the fact that people want to interact with secular culture. So that's an area where modern Orthodoxy is unique among all of the Jewish community, both observant and not observant. So, you know, where do we stand? The question is always asked, where do we stand as modern Orthodox Jews? So we did actually ask a few questions among modern Orthodox Jews about traditional beliefs and practices. Traditional beliefs and practices. So for example, we asked these 4,000 modern Orthodox Jews, do you believe, I mean, this might sound like a weird question. Do you believe Hashem created the world? Do you believe Hashem is involved in your day-to-day life? Okay. Do you believe Hashem cares about everything that happens to you? Do you believe that Hashem loves you? These are some of the things. There's a lady in Denver, Aliza Bulow, who's a wonderful person who wrote an article in Jewish Action, the OU magazine, about the continuum of Emunah. There's a spectrum of beliefs. And we really try to get an understanding of what people believe. So for example, do you believe Hashem created the world? It turns out that 90% of the modern Orthodox Jews said yes. Some of the others said, I'm not so sure. A few said, not really. Okay, 90%. We asked, do you believe that Hashem is involved in all day-to-day activities and guides the events of your life? And there about three quarters said yes. Do you believe Hashem loves you and everything that happens to you is for your best? Also about three quarters said yes. Okay, so one thing you'll notice is these numbers are not 100%. They're actually not 100% in the Haredi world either. A lot of them are in the high 90s, because we ask the same question to people, in yeshivish people and Hasidish people. So some of the questions, do you believe that Hashem is involved in your day-to-day life? 75%. If you go to the Haredi people, it ends up being in the high 90s. It's never 100%. There are always people with doubts. Somebody came over to me and said to me, you know, you asked about davening every day with tefillin, and you got a number that I thought was kind of low, like about 70%. said they daven every day with tefillin. How do you include them in your survey? Why are you including those people in your survey of modern Orthodox Jews? If the guy doesn't daven with tefillin every day and have tzitzit and eat kosher, in my view, they're not Orthodox. I said, well, that's an important point. It's in your view, but you know, if I eliminated all those people from my survey, you'd get a survey that's everybody like you, and you'd look at it and say, wow, that's great. Is it not more important and more valuable for you to understand what these numbers are? There's great value in understanding that 8% or whatever of people, you know, have some kind of doubt about the role of God. It's an educational opportunity for one thing. And we need to understand that within the community, there is actually diversity. You know, there's diversity in every community. There's diversity in the conservative world. As we all know, there's been friction in that world in terms of, there are many conservative synagogues where you have two minyanim. One is an egalitarian and one is not. So there's conflict in every branch. You know, we asked about Shomer Shabbos, 91% that I'm strictly or mostly Shomer Shabbos. 95% said I'm strictly or mostly kosher. You know, we didn't get into the details of what mostly means, maybe in the house, outside the house. But my point here is that we are a very diverse group in our beliefs and practices, and we need to understand that. It's not a bad thing. It's the reality. It's not a bad thing. You know, when I was growing up, as I mentioned to the rabbi, when I was growing up in Flatbush in the early 1950s, the Orthodox world was very simple. It was very simple. There were people like my father who came over from Europe. You know, he wasn't really Hasidish and he wasn't yeshivish. He was what they would call Haimish, you know, a Haimish Jew, like a traditional Jew who was very serious about his Judaism. In my community, most of the people were Haimish. And then there were a few American Jews. That's all they were. They were American Jews. They were modern. They were kids who grew up in Brooklyn in the 1940s and they were modern, like the rabbi of my shul, Rabbi Herbert W. Bomzer, he was an American Jew. So, you know, we didn't have all these gradations. We didn't have liberal, modern Orthodox, or centrist. We didn't have any of these gradations. So today it's very different. One of the interesting questions that I asked was, among people who said, I am modern or centrist Orthodox, I said, can you define that a little bit better? I'm going to give you five categories and tell me whether any of these fit you. I said, are you... And this is back in 2017. I said, are you open Orthodox? I should say right up front, I did not define any of these. I said, are you open Orthodox? Are you liberal modern Orthodox? Are you modern Orthodox? Are you centrist Orthodox? Or are you centrist Orthodox leaning toward the yeshivish without any definition? So you might ask me, why did I ask modern Orthodox and centrist Orthodox different? Two separate categories, I can tell you that. But my point is that 93% of the people were able to check one of those boxes. They said, yeah, that's me. I'm liberal modern Orthodox. I'm not modern Orthodox. I'm centrist Orthodox. Yeah, I'm centrist leaning toward yeshivish. The other 7%, a lot of them said, you know, I really object to labels, which is a view. It is a view. You know, labels, you know, are they good? Are they bad? A few people said I'm a combination. A lot of people said I'm Haimish, which is a combination of modern with either yeshivish or Hasidish. One person said, I am all those things. I would love to meet that person. Okay, anyway. So what's happened is from a simple world where you were either a Haimish Jew or you were an American Jew, modern Jew, we become this very diverse group of people. Is it good that we're diverse? Is it bad? Not only are we diverse, but people are actually moving all the time. We live in America. What's in America? You live in Canada. The Western world is a place of choice. What's the most important thing? The government telling you what to do? I can tell you, looking at the vaccine, the comments I get, nobody wants to listen to the government. May the Lord bless and keep the government every Shabbos far away from me, as is said in Fiddler on the Roof. No, we want to make choices. I'm choosing to be Orthodox. I'm choosing to be yeshivish. And we'll talk about that. People are choosing. So I went back to the question I was asked originally back in Cincinnati. Who owns modern Orthodoxy? So I said, you know, what does it mean to own modern Orthodoxy? To me, owning means paying for it. Who pays for modern Orthodoxy? I think one of the things we learned in the survey a couple of weeks ago is that we the people are really paying. We're paying for our Orthodoxy. Yeah, the organizations are paying, but we're paying. Ownership means being responsible for its maintenance and continued existence. Who is responsible for the continued existence of Orthodoxy? Yeah, the shuls, the yeshivas, definitely the yeshivas, Lakewood, etc., Cleveland, Baltimore, and the Russia yeshiva, the deans of the yeshivas. They are certainly responsible for its maintenance. A Hasidish person would say that they are the children. Having seven per family is very responsible for the continued existence of Orthodoxy. But to me, also, one of the things about ownership is who defines the rules, who makes the rules under which Orthodoxy operates. I think once you get into that aspect of who has the authority to make decisions and who has, you really get a better understanding of who owns Orthodoxy. So, you know, Orthodoxy has three main groups: Hasidish, Yeshivish, and modern or centrist. The first two are really truth in advertising. Yeshivish basically tells you this is who owns our branch. Who owns Yeshivish Orthodoxy? The yeshivas, the rabbis, the rabbinic leaders, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, our canonical books. It's telling you very straight up front, you're yeshivish, that's who runs our branch of Orthodoxy. Similarly, the Hasidish world, who owns the Hasidish world? Well, it's the Rebbe. You know, if you're a Satmar Chas, if you're a Skverer Chasid, and I had the honor after one of the highlights of my last year was after we did our survey on vaccines, our little group from Hatzalah went to meet with the Skverer Rebbe, he's one of the great, great Hasidic leaders in the world today. And without any doubt, if you look at the line of people every night, we're waiting to get guidance from him, the Rebbeim, the Hasidic rabbis, own that branch of Orthodoxy. So who owns modern is what? It's like an adjective. Are we really modern? Is that our goal to leave everything behind and become modern? I asked somebody, are you modern Orthodox? And she said, no, I'm not. I cover my hair. You know, modern is an adjective. And I think that's really why the term centrist Orthodoxy came into being, because it reflects more that we're centrally positioned. So who owns modern Orthodoxy? You know, was it Rabbi Sack, Olav HaShalom, the chief rabbi of the British Commonwealth? Is it the Orthodox Union? Okay, is it the RCA? So you could say, yeah, you could say, you know, the Orthodox Union and Yeshiva University and the National Council of Young Israel, they don't really own it, but they give us very strong guidance. You know, when we ask people about these Jewish organizations, we ask them, should these Jewish organizations decide policy, Jewish policies? They said no. The one area where they said yes was they should lobby in behalf of Israel. But you know, in the end, if you're trying to answer the question about who owns modern Orthodoxy, it's really the people. Why do I say that? Okay, so I talked about the diversity. You can choose what you want to be. You want to be a liberal or modern Orthodox Jew? Go for it. It's your decision. It's not the community's decision. Unlike in the Hasidic world, where you can't get up and say, I choose to be a literal a liberal Satmar Hasid, which, by the way, that does exist. But as Orthodox Jews, we have the right to choose where we want to position ourselves within that spectrum. I asked the rabbi whom you mentioned, Rabbi Kelman, as somebody, excuse me. You mentioned a rabbi in your I think he's related to you through marriage. I asked him who owns modern Orthodoxy. He said, you know, it's the shuls, it's the rabbis, it's the people. We're so diverse that basically we kind of let people within reason practice the way they want to. We ask people, does your shul rabbi's decisions and guidance reflect an understanding of modern life the way you understand it? And 85% said yes. That's because people are picking the shuls and rabbis that they want to interact with. So in answer to the question of who owns modern Orthodoxy, it's really the people and the rabbis and shuls. In the survey we did in 2017, just to overlay one very important fact, one of the questions we asked everybody is, how important is your Orthodox observance to you? How important is it to you? Because, you know, you look at people that are in different places in the spectrum, and you might say, you know, it's really more important. My Orthodoxy is more important to me than to that person, or more important to a yeshivish person than to a more liberal modern Orthodox. And we did find some truth in that, but overall, within the modern Orthodox community, 3/4 of the people said that my Orthodox Judaism is a very important part of my life, Another about 15% said it's not very, very important. It's not one of the most important things in my life, but it's pretty important. And then 9% said, you know, I'm Orthodox. It's there. Would I say it's an important part of my life? Not really, you know, 9%. So people used to ask me when I did my study of people who leave Orthodoxy, people would say to me, you know, how many people are leaving? How many people are at risk of leaving? I would say, you know, we really don't know. But, you know, if you look at this number, like in the 10% range, I would say somewhere like 10% of modern Orthodox Jews are not really tightly spiritually connected on a daily basis to their beliefs and behaviors with their Orthodoxy. So, you know, they're at risk. A lot of them stay within the community for communal reasons and social reasons. But the lesson here is that men and women were equal in terms of how important their Orthodoxy is to them. It didn't vary much by ages. It was a little bit higher as people get older, which I think happens in other religions as well. But our Orthodoxy is important to us. We practice it differently among people. We sometimes believe at different levels, but overall, it's a very important part of our lives. Okay, oh, there we go. So 3 years ago, my wife and I went to visit our number 2 granddaughter in Israel. She was studying at Chalvim, which is a seminary for girls. And Friday night, we went to the Kotel. And if you've ever been to the Kotel on a Friday night, you know there are probably 50 minyanim in every corner of the Kotel. They're all very small, little ultimate breakaway minyanim. And I was at a minyan with my granddaughters at that time, boyfriend who was studying in a boys yeshiva. And there were 12 of us in total, and there were 10 men. One of them was the Rosh Yeshiva of the school where my grandson is now studying, Oraita. And afterwards, after davening, we started talking to each other about our backgrounds. I would tell you that I and my granddaughter's boyfriend were the only ones without beards. We were the only ones without hats. All the other 10 looked very Borough Park, if I can use that term. I hope I'm not insulting anyone. They would look very Borough. It turned out that of those 10, every single one of those 10 did not grow up Orthodox, which kind of blew my mind, including the Rosh Yeshiva of my grandson's school. They all had grown up mostly as conservative Jews, and they all had decided to become Orthodox, and they were all in Israel. When the Pew survey came out in 2013, they reported that about 40% of American modern Orthodox Jews did not grow up Orthodox. That means 40% were Baalei Tshuva, which I thought was, I asked people to guess, and they say the number that people usually guess is like in the 10 to 15% range. In my survey that I did in 2017, we asked that question, and I came up with 42%. I asked, at what point in your life did you become Orthodox? And people would say, well, I was born Orthodox, raised that way. It's called from birth, before bar mitzvah, after bar mitzvah, after 18, after 25. And I could break it down. But if you look at the people who became Orthodox after bar or bat mitzvah, in my survey, it was 42%. So you're looking at, when you look at American modern Orthodox Jews, you're looking at a very heterogeneous group in terms of their upbringing. You have people who grew up with it, and you have a lot of people who did not. You know, I'll mention again something I mentioned when I spoke last year, which is interesting. We asked people, why did you become Orthodox? What caused you? And the number one and number two reasons were as follows. The number one reason was I was intellectually attracted to or curious. Most of these people were conservative Jews. I just found a large body of knowledge there. I mean, if you look at the Rabbi and I were talking about our Sfarim, the Jewish text. I mean, we have a body of knowledge, an intellectual probing and understanding of Jewish law and life that goes back thousands of years. And that's very attractive to people. They were more an intellectual group. That's who we're attracting. The other, right behind that, was people who said, you know, I grew up conservative reform. Orthodoxy is really more, it's really authentic. It's really authentic. So those, and there were a lot of reasons given. There were a lot of reasons given. You know, number three was, I feel it connects me better to my Jewish roots and heritage. Number four was the orthodoxy and the Torah. I view them as more truthful than what I've been what I've grown up with. So, in the survey we did of people, who become Orthodox, Bali Tshuva, we did ask a question about what were the main challenges you faced in becoming Orthodox. So people say, oh yeah, the main challenges is learning Hebrew, learning to read, learning the language, learning what to do in shul, learning what not to do, all those things. And all those things actually ended up as number two on the list. By a pretty wide margin, by a really wide margin, more than twice as many people said, you know, the biggest challenge was who I left behind. My parents have absolutely no understanding of what I've done. They think I'm off the rails. Our friends, we had to drop some of our friends. I have new friends. So really it was the relationship with parents and family and friends mentioned number one. And in the survey from 2019, we cover a lot about the lives of Baalei Teshuva, But one of the interesting questions we asked was, how long have you been Orthodox? When you became Orthodox, how would you describe your Orthodoxy then? And how do you describe it now? Because the theory was, so the person's been Orthodox 20 years, and they were very zealous, and they were very centrist, modern Orthodox. And guess what? Today, if you ask them what they are, they would say, you know what? I'm Haimish, or I'm Yeshivish. Or they might have gone gung-ho into Orthodoxy and become very, very right-wingish, if I can use the term. And they backslid, and now they're kind of a little bit more easygoing. But the theory was that whatever they were when they became Orthodox, they've moved on in some direction, which is consistent with the theory that we all are making choices on a day-to-day basis, and we're standing still. The average person today who is, the average 50-year-old person today, if you ask them what they were like religiously 20 years ago, probably say, I was actually a lot more from then. But they might say, oh, you know what? I really wasn't pretty observant at all, but I've taken on more. So people are making these changes. So when we ask people who are Baalei Teshuva, have they changed from their early years when they adopted Orthodoxy? Only one in four said, I'm pretty much in the same place. One in four said, yeah, you know, I became Orthodox 25 years ago. I'm pretty much in the same place today. One in four said, the number's 25%, said, yeah, I became Orthodox, and I'm actually not as Orthodox today as I was then. You know, it was very exciting. I took on a lot of details, and you know, I've become a little bit more modern or moderate. But fully half, 50% said yes. I became Orthodox 15 years ago, and today I would say I am actually more religious and observant than I was then. And we ask people to describe that. That's all in the survey. We ask people to describe that. Most people said, I learn more, I become more knowledgeable, which you'd expect over time. A lot of people said, you know, I've just had a general move towards being more observant, and gave a lot of examples. Among the people who said, I've become less observant, they said, yeah, you know, I was very zealous and I moved too quickly. I've become a little bit more flexible over time. But the point being that people change. One of the interesting questions that I asked was, are there things from you became observant, are there things from your prior life before you became Orthodox that you have held on to in your Orthodox life? So the thing that more people said than anything else was, yeah, I've held on to a general liberal views. I was kind of more liberal when I was before Orthodox, and I've held on to some of that. I've also held on to liberal political views. And in fact, a lot of the people in the modern Orthodox community who tend to be more liberal, a high percentage of them grew up not Orthodox. People said I've held on to my love of secular music and secular knowledge and culture and art, which is interesting because remember, the theory of modern Orthodoxy is that we do embed ourselves with Torah Umada, with secular culture and secular life. It's okay. But when we ask these people, what have you held on to? They say, I've held on to my love of secular culture and art. My favorite answers were the following two people. One person said, I'm still a fan of the New York Jets, which is a football team. I actually feel sorry for that person since the Jets are kind of pathetic. And another person said, which I found to be a very funny answer. He said, you know what? I've held on to my sense of humor. I mean, there is a role for humor in Judaism. I mean, we are a sarcastic, humorous people, but I found that answer kind of interesting. So that's kind of a little profile of people who became Orthodox. And the main takeaway there is a lot of it is happening. 40% plus of us did not grow up Orthodox. And once you become Orthodox, it doesn't mean that you're going to be X, because 10 years from now, you might be X plus or X minus. So just the point being that we there's a lot of transition. We also found the same thing is true in people leaving Orthodoxy. So I said, we don't really know how many people are leaving. I get a sense that among modern Orthodox youth, there is a disturbingly high percentage of kids that at least at that point in time, and you're talking maybe 5-10 years after going through a modern Orthodox day school, do not have levels of beliefs and practices that are fully consistent with Orthodoxy. That's just my sense. They haven't been surveyed. I would like to. They haven't been surveyed. I do get a sense that that's happening at the same time. It's not at the 40% level, 40% of people moving into Orthodoxy. You know, the percentage that are leaving, I believe is far smaller, but it is happening. You know, just to share with you a couple of interesting findings. When we did the survey in 2016 of why did you leave Orthodoxy? And these are for modern Orthodox, because we also surveyed Hasidish and Yeshivish and Chabad. I'll just share with you some of the top reasons. The top reason among men left modern Orthodoxy was as follows. I grew up and I was taught X, evolution, age of the universe. I was taught Jewish exceptionalism, that Jews that were in some ways we're the chosen people, chosen meaning better. That's what I was taught. And over time, I've become aware of things that conflict with that. I might have read a book on biblical criticism. I've met some really, really ethical, fine non-Jews. So, you know, why are you telling me that, you know, non-Jews don't have the same values that we get from the Torah? Basically, the number one reason among men is, you know, over time, I just basically came in contact with information and thought that conflicted with what I'd learned. And more importantly, there was nobody who could answer my questions. I would ask a question, you know, Rebbe, you told me this. And the Rebbe's would not answer my question. There was a movie called One of Us on Netflix a few years ago about three people, I think four maybe, who left Orthodoxy. And there's a scene in which one of them is asking a question of their Rebbe, and the Rebbe just has no answer. My takeaway from this is that if you are a teacher in any grade from age grade three, because I have grandchildren in grades 5, 4, 2, and 1, and they can ask questions. You teach in any of those grades, you need to be prepared to answer some serious questions. You know, your average 14-year-old kid, believe you, you might find this surprising, but your average 14-year-old kid in pure brain power is probably smarter than any of us. They don't know anywhere near what we know, but I mean, they in their processing ability and their ability to understand and to poke at hypocrisy and to really see underlying truths, they're actually very smart. And they deserve answers. So they deserve answers. So that was my number one takeaway from the survey. I should tell you that among women, among modern Orthodox women, the number one reason that the woman gave for leaving Orthodoxy was they objected to aspects of how modern Orthodoxy saw the role and status of women. Okay, which might not surprise you, but you know, if your expectations are X, if your expectations are X and the reality of the community is Y, then, you know, some people just have difficulty with that. And some people look for something else. One final tidbit of information on this, which I'll share, is that 37% of the modern Orthodox women said that they left because of the role and status of women. And 7% of the men said that. And there's a gap. There's a gap there, which if you can parse that and make of that what you will. Okay. You know, I summarized that report. So this to me, when people ask me, I have a friend, Sid, he said to me, Mark, what did you learn in your survey? I said, how much do you want to know? He says, you know, 15 seconds. He has a short attention span. He says, 15 seconds. What can you tell me? I said, Sid, it's a 98-page study, but I'll tell you this. We asked people why they left. They gave us like 50 reasons. I divided them into two groups. Pull, something in the outside world lured me out. Push, something in our community that I dislike pushed me out. And by a 2-to-1 margin, the push, the things that they saw within our community that they objected to, pushed them out more than they were. Yeah, some were lured by the internet and lured by secular knowledge, but more often than not, people left because they were pushed out. If you read the news, you know that the big news, the huge news in Israel and in the U.S. these days is how we address sexual abuse. And there is still a lot. There is still protection and excuses made for abusers. It's starting to change. It's starting to change. But when we ask people, you know, if you ask people, did you leave because of sexual abuse? A small percentage say yes, a small percentage. If you ask people, did you leave because you object to how the community protects and doesn't deal with the problem? Many more people say that. That's the problem. That's the problem. Okay. So those are a few highlights from the survey we did of people who left modern Orthodoxy. You know, also just, I mentioned the continuing shifting. Am I supposed to go for a full hour, Rabbi? Or, yeah, I think so.
I would go till about 11:55 or so, or, you
okay,
know,
great.
Come in
for good,
them
good,
with
good.
Any questions. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good. So, you know, we talked about people becoming Orthodox and leaving. So everyone always says, oh, people say to me, more liberal people say, oh, I'm so upset. Everything's moving to the right. Why can't it be the way it was when I grew up? Everything's moving to the right. On the other hand, yeah, people say, yeah, okay, what's with open Orthodoxy? Why are we moving to the left? So are we actually moving to the right? And are we actually moving to the left? So we actually asked people that question. We said, over the last 10 years, would you say that you have become more observant or less observant? So you have to remember that this is a fixed group. We're asking people today who are modern Orthodox. So somebody who was modern Orthodox 10 years ago and today is yeshivish is not included. But also if they were modern Orthodox 10 years ago and today don't view themselves as Orthodox, they were not included. But within this group called modern Orthodox, 40% said, yes, I've become more observant in the last decade. And about 20% said, I've become less observant. So you could say, yeah, overall, there has been a shift in the past decade towards more observance. I mean, to me, that fits with what I see. I think that fits with what I see. It's kind of hard to measure. You'd have to do what's called a longitudinal study. You'd have to really get a group of 100 people and track them over 10 or 20 years. That would be an interesting study. I don't think I'm old enough to undertake it, but if a younger researcher wants to do it, it would be interesting. I will tell you that men have shifted to the right more than women. Okay, more than women. You know, the issue of the role of women was a huge issue in the mid 2010s. It's kind of receded in discussion mainly because of the pandemic and politics. So we moved on to even more fragmenting issues, if that's at all possible. But it's still an issue. It's still an issue, although it's kind of on the back burner. But both men and women have become more observant, but men more than women. I will just tell you that I have three possible future surveys in mind. One is a survey of couples, men and women, whom they would fill out the survey separately, but their responses would be linked. And I'm really interested in knowing whether there are marriages where the men and women are on different levels Jewishly, and basically, is it a factor in their marriage? My theory is that it's really not, but that's an idea for a future survey. An even more interesting question that I asked was, we asked, are you married? Whatever, do you have children? Do you have any children over the age of 18? And then I said, okay, I said, think about your oldest child over the age of 18. Would you say that your child is more observant than you are, or less observant than you are, or about the same? And on this one, we got an interesting result. We got kind of the perfect storm of research, which is overall 33% said my child is more observant than I am, and 33% said my child is less observant than I am, and 34% said my child is the same place I'm in. I will tell you that whatever they said, they said more or less observant, we asked them to describe what that's like. So very interesting. People say my child is more observant than I am, and you can actually read how people define that. But overall, our children are about as observant as we are. But, and here's a big but, when you ask the people on the right, when you ask the people who are like centrist Orthodox or centrist toward yeshivish, many more of them said my child is more observant than I am. So you have the group that's most observant today, and they're telling you, and half of them are saying, yeah, my child is more observant than me. And then you go to the left side of the spectrum, people who are open Orthodox or liberal modern Orthodox, and a majority of them said, my child is less observant than I am. So what does that mean? If the children of the ones on the right are becoming even more on the right, and the children of the people on the left are becoming even more on the left, what you have there is you have stretching. You have a stretching of the next generation that's even more stretched out than we are. So although today we're like a bell curve, you know, centrist, left wing, right wing, the curve is going to get even more stretched in the next generation, which is interesting. Okay, so finally, I mentioned Torah Umada, which is the core belief. I don't know if the word the core worldview, hashkafa worldview, philosophy of modern centrist orthodoxy is that we interact with secular society. Okay, not just because we have to make a living, but we do it because we value science, we value culture, okay? We see value in Michelangelo and Galileo. We go to a doctor for medical opinion. We do not go to rabbis for medical opinions. I don't go to my rabbi to ask him a question. I got a job offer. I don't go to my rabbi for advice on whether I should take it. I use that as an example because I have a yeshivish cousin who did that. But that's our worldview, Torah Umada. So the question, we did this whole survey about how is that working out for us. And one of the questions we asked them was, you know, the theory is that this is good. The theory is that Torah Umada is good, that there are benefits. We benefit as Jews because of our interacting with society. So we asked people, do you actually have interactions with secular culture? And pretty much everyone said yes. And then we asked them, are those interactions positive or negative? And almost everybody, like 90% of the people said, yeah, I interact with secular society and it's good. I get value out of it. And then we asked people, so what do you get? What do you get out of it? What do you get out of it? I mean, does Galileo enhance your understanding of Rosh Chodesh benching, of blessing the new moon, because he was an astronomer? Okay, so the thing that people mentioned more often than anything else was, you know what? The value of my being a modern Orthodox Jew is I interact every day with other Jews, non-Orthodox, and with non-Jews. And here is my opportunity to show them what it's like to be an American Jew, that we're smart, we're ethical, we're nice, and we're just like them in terms of being productive human beings and caring people. And it really is our chance to expose the rest of the world. And yeah, the Haredis, they're insular and people get an impression of them. But our job is to show the world that being an Orthodox Jew is good and that we're generous, kind, caring people. But then we also asked the question, are there challenges facing you in your life? Are there challenges facing you because of your interaction with secular culture? And here again, a very high percentage said, Yeah, there are. A similar percentage of in the 80s said, yeah, there are challenges. So we asked them, so how do you deal with the challenges? How do you deal with the challenges? So about half the people said there are challenges, and I, in my lifetime, have been religiously firm. So when I'm challenged, when there's a company dinner, I am 100% firm. 100% firm would mean that they either don't go or they're 100% abide by the rules of kashrus in terms of what they request, et cetera, et cetera. If they need to be somewhere for a conference over Shabbos, they would figure it out and be 100% Shomer Shabbos. If the hotel doors have key locks, you ask the owner to put a piece of tape over so you can go in and out without violating Shabbos. So people say, yeah, I interact with society. I go to conferences. I work in the workplace. But I'm 100% religiously firm. About 30% said, yeah, I sometimes compromise. And we did ask them how to define that. And, what one person says, they sometimes compromise. I sometimes compromise. I was invited to a company dinner. I had a salad. What in their mind is definitely a compromise, you might say, yeah, it's not so bad. Was it a fruit salad? I don't know, whatever. Only 7% said, I tend to be flexible. That's lechatchila, which means a priori. They are modern Orthodox, but when the need arises, they move towards flexibility to the extent they can. So I would say in general, our being modern Orthodox has value. Not so much the value of secular knowledge, but the value of secular culture and being and interacting with non-Jews. It's a positive. And there are challenges. And in general, people have figured out how to deal with them. Okay. Finally, we asked people, these people, are there changes in our society that you would like to see? We asked them, okay, so you interact with secular culture. So you see what the world's like in all of its immorality. So we say in all of its, attitudes. Are there things in the secular culture that you think we as Orthodox could learn from? Okay, are there things we should adopt? And then we asked, okay, are there things you see in the secular world that you see us as adopting, which you think are really bad ideas? And interestingly enough, the same things came up in both questions. So when we asked people, are there things you think we should adopt? They said, yeah, I work in a company, our general counsel, head of the law department, is a woman. My personal experience, the head of our law department was Zoe Baird, who almost became the first secretary of state, attorney general, excuse me. And she's wonderful. She's brilliant. She's just as smart as any guy. We need to give women more of a role. People said that. People said, I see it in the secular culture. We need to do more of that in our society. On the other hand, people said, yeah, I see in our culture more of a role for women, because we are mimicking the outside world and we should not be doing that. That was number one among things people liked, and it was also number one among things that people disliked. Number two among things that people liked was, yeah, we need to figure out how to deal with LGBTQ gay people. And people who disliked it said, yeah, our society is moving too rapidly towards acceptance of that. So yeah, so our interaction with secular culture does expose us to some of the major trends and shifts in secular society, of which the change in the acceptance of LGBTQ over the past decade has been the number one social shift. And the view of, the views of women are probably somewhere up high in that list as well. And some people like it and some people don't. Some people like it. One question, the last question I'll share with you is we asked people, do you agree with this statement? There's no longer a single cohesive modern Orthodox community. Modern Orthodoxy should acknowledge this and would perhaps be better off splitting into separate groups. I mean, what do you think? One out of three people said, yeah, I tend to agree with that. Things are getting a little bit out of hand. But the vast majority said no. We are a defined group within Orthodoxy. We have disagreements within our group. We're living with them. I think the disagreements with the role of women have kind of faded in the background in recent years. The Orthodox, there are a number of shuls that have women in positions on the rabbi's staff. None of them go by the title rabbi. They go by other titles. The Orthodox Union gave them a certain time period to discontinue that practice. I think at this point, it's don't ask, don't tell. Nothing has changed. I would say that the two things that in the last 5 years have become more fragmenting are politics, at least in the U.S. Trump versus Biden, left versus right, has become more fragmenting to the point where when I did a survey, and I did that survey about who did you vote for and why, a number of schools said, we don't want to send the survey to our, just the word politics makes people crazy. And the other thing that's become fragmenting recently, not as much, is the issue of vaccines. I think there's definitely a divide there between there's a strong divide between the modern Orthodox and the Haredi world. I should tell you, in the Haredi world, a majority have gotten vaccines, but there is a core group of people that are anti-vaxxers, and everyone gets very upset about that. So that is today's presentation on where we stand and where we are going. The final survey that I talked about was the cost of Orthodoxy. A lot of really great information, and we'll talk about that a week from today.
Thank you. Okay. Do you want me to go through the questions for you? Would that be a little bit easier?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So just, and I've read the beginning more and you sort of alluded to that, but you say, are you including partnership in Yanim and open Orthodoxy? As you heard, the answer is yes. It's self-defined. Everybody defines himself what group of Orthodoxy they want to be. Okay. Yeah. What we do makes the paper. Okay. Yes. Unfortunately, because that's the way it always goes. Yes. It's a self-definition. No objective criteria. Correct. Not at least in this. Okay. Sarah wants to know, has gender issues. You sort of alluded to it, make it to faith issues. I don't know if you're talking about LGBT issues or you said we're half, the population of transgender. How does that fit in? Perhaps if you want to address that.
Well, okay. So first of all, in the surveys I do, I ask people what their gender is, male, female. Okay. And I do give a third category. And so first thing I should say is only in all the surveys I've done, which have gone out to like 15,000 people, only two people ever commented in any way on my inclusion of that third category in gender, which to me, everyone saw the question. And I think people understand there's an issue. Among the groups that I would like to do research in, my next study probably will be singles, because every time I do a survey, people say, what about the singles, the young people, the unmarried, divorcees? There are many small groups. There are many Jews of color, transgender, etc., that definitely are worth surveying. I didn't get at that directly, but in terms of male versus female, on the survey I did in 2017, the very broad survey, every question in that survey was split in responses between men and women. The only one I mentioned today was there was a front page article in the foreword that said, the headline was, "Modern Orthodox women are checking out." That was the wording she used, checking out. Why? Because they're so upset about the role of women, the limited role of women, that they're checking out. So when I asked the question about how important is your Orthodox observance, your Orthodoxy as a part of your life, it was interesting to note that the results for men and women were very, very different. You can go to the next step and ask, well, you as a man, what is it about Orthodoxy that you love? And we do that. Is it learning? Is it davening? Is it community? You could ask that of women and compare them. That we did not do that level of analysis, but there's no doubt that how men see Orthodoxy as important to them and how women see it are not the same.
To me, that's obvious. Listen, right there, wrong, objective. You walk into shul and they make a blessing that they're not you. Shalom Sani Isha. I'm being serious. You go to shul and simple story. I can be a doctor at this, but I can't be a rabbi. In other words, if you want to know why women would check out, I think the answer is very obvious. I'm not passing any judgment now. What you think about that, good, bad, but like you say, this is a survey of what is, not the way you want it to be necessarily. So I think it's quite obvious why women would want to check out, and they're not counted towards a minion, and, you know, and all the reasons. And it's,
but what we found is that women don't really check out. They don't leave the belief and everything. They find a place for themselves. So whereas I daven every morning, my wife joined the Chevra Kadisha, which is the burial society, which I don't want to do. I don't want to do. But these women I know have all found a place within Orthodoxy that gives them great value. She's on the phone every Tuesday for 4 hours with seminars and Jewish workshops in Israel. So I think we all find that we're resilient, and a man finds a place at Daf Yomi where he's learning, and a woman finds a class that she goes to or a chesed activity. She's setting up a group to go to visit hospitals, whatever. So they have found a place.
100%, but it doesn't work for everybody. Okay, let's move on there, because there are a bunch of questions. I want to get to as many as we can, so quickly. Yes. Just interesting, people debating what it means to be a modern Haredi, you know, sort of, which you for sure see that they may be, I don't know what they're here they're referring to, but yeah, if you want to address that issue, being quote unquote modern Haredi.
Yeah, so I'll give an example. So for example, there's a Rabbi Berman, who is a leader in analyzing biblical criticism, which is biblical criticism is very much criticized because it really gets at the foundations of belief. He was on a podcast and he said, you know what? I was invited to be a scholar in residence for a small group of Satmar Hasidim in Williamsburg. Okay, so you should know that within the Haredi world, there's a spectrum of belief as well. There are people who are curious. There's actually a huge influx of the internet, especially among men in the workplace. I remember when I worked at the insurance company, you know, work and entertainment became commingled. So I would go on the internet to check out websites. And I'm sure the Haredi do it too. So there are modern Haredi. Within the yeshivish world, there are those who don't watch TV and those who do. There are those who only get their news from the Haredi newspapers, and those who get the even the New York Times. So there's a spectrum. Just as there's a spectrum in modern Orthodoxy, there's a spectrum in the yeshivish world and in the Hasidic world and the Haredi world.
I guess you'd say just like there's social Orthodoxy in the modern Orthodox world, there's social Orthodoxy in the Haredi world too. They play the role, even if they don't buy into the whole ideology.
We had a yeshivish woman over at our house. Yeshivish woman at our house. We watched the movie Saturday night. I was actually cringing a little bit. It was kind of an R-rated movie, and she was laughing. She was laughing hysterically. So I think we tend to peg people, but we have to realize that not only are we different as a community, but every person is different. And one of the things about Judaism is we all take on different things.
Okay, very interesting question. Did you know what percentage of Orthodox and perhaps modern Orthodox Jews are Gerim, are converts?
I recall asking that question. I'm going to look it up. We did ask it in the survey we did in 2019, where we asked people, are you, we did a study about Balei Tshuva. I think we had a fair number. Like, I think we had maybe 50 out of the 800 people who were Balei Tshuva. I think maybe 50 were converts. They're a tough group to survey because there's fewer of them. The woman I mentioned, Elisa Bulow, who's a leader in the yeshivish world, is a convert. I suspect that if we made people walk around with badges identifying themselves, we would be surprised. We'd be surprised. I never imagined that about you. We went to a store in Tzfat. Well, Tzfat, of course, you know. And we bought some artwork from this really, really Hasidic guy. And I was looking at, and he had a photo on the wall. I looked at the photo and said, is that you? Because I guess apparently one time he was a real San Francisco Haight-Ashbury hippie, everything, just total hippie. Yeah. Yep. That was me. That's not me now.
Yeah. It was in the paper yesterday. But what's his first name? The basketball player Stoudemire. He's looking for a shidduch, you know, an NBA, a former New York Knick wants a shidduch now. But it's for sure way higher. I think I can think off the top of my head are 4 or 5 converts at the shul. I have another, get 100 people on Shabbat, 150 people, and 5 of them are converts, you know. And I would suspect that of the 72 people still online right now, that probably 96% of them have at least one convert who davens in their shul, at least one, and probably most of them have two. I'm just curious. It's way higher than we think.
We have one. He was the president of our shul. We violated the constitution of the National Council of Young Israel. They ignored it. We've had 4 women. 4 of our last 7 presidents have been women. I'm not telling you this because I'm proud of our shul. I am proud of our shul. I'm telling you this about the fact that even within our Young Israel movement, there's just a huge, huge variety of shuls and practices and beliefs.
Okay, and I think Chaim's question very important. Just a comment, and I know you weren't really talking about that, but just to raise the issue, being open orthodoxy doesn't necessarily, or you're going to say on a statistical basis, maybe it does, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're less observant. It's a hashkafa. You can be extremely meticulous in halacha. You just believe women can be rabbis or, you know, in all kinds of partnership minyanim, whatever you might believe in. So if you want to comment that it's not always fair to say that right wing is more observant and left wing is less observant.
Oh, the philosophy of, you know, open orthodoxy doesn't mean liberal or less observant orthodoxy. It means that you can read the book if you want to. I don't know if you can see this. Okay. By Rabbi Avi Weiss, Journey into Open Orthodoxy. It means that we are open to people different from us. It means we're open from people. It means that if I'm in a shul in Brooklyn, New York, and a young man comes in and he's transgender, and he's obviously transgender. Questions like, is he a man or a woman? Where does he sit? The honors, to the extent we can. First of all, we don't make him feel uncomfortable at all. He's a Jew. She's a Jew. And to the extent we can, we're open to these kind of people. We're open to them in wherever they are in their journey, as opposed to, you know, open as opposed to what? As opposed to being closed? Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, there are people who walk into a shul who look different from everyone else there. And, you know, there's less openness and more openness. Within the open Orthodox community, there are people who go to Daf Yomi, and there are people who learn every day, and people who are 100% Shomer Shabbos. So, yeah, you're right. Is there a correlation between observance and openness? I would have to say, yes, there is. But it's not definitional. That's a definition of open orthodoxy.
Okay, I just somebody pointing out, of course, that the middle is shrinking. You say, you know, we're stretching orthodoxy, and the middle is
The middle is still, it was still 40%, like a majority still said modern orthodox or centrist orthodox. But if the kids of the people on the right are moving further to the right.
I mean, I think, yeah, we see that. I think it's quite obvious. You know, I always say it's very true.
I sometimes give a talk and I hold up this round egg and I ask people, do you know what this is? And people say, yes. Some people say, yeah, I know what it is. It's silly putty. So yeah, I think most of you might know what silly putty is. The nature of silly putty is if you stretch it slowly, it stretches. Right? Stretch it and it stretches. Pull it hard and it breaks. That's what we're like. If we stretch ourselves slowly, everything is great. But if we avoid ruptures that break us apart, that would be a good
okay. And just let's wrap up a little bit. Okay, Sarah's pointing out, I guess it's part of how I think, maybe unfortunately, whatever. Her question on gender was not so much about LGBT and gender. It was more about, are men and women more accepting? You alluded to that, you know, on faith-based issues, on observance, are the women firmer than the men, quote unquote, or vice versa, more believing? Could you, you know, did you see any major divide on that issue?
Okay, so as I mentioned, the question about how important orthodoxy was to them in their lives, we did not find a difference. So I mentioned also that every question we asked was split between men and women. So for example, the questions about belief, and a lot of them were in the report. Yeah. So, for example, we asked them, do you believe that Hashem created the world? men 90%, women 90%. Do you believe Hashem is involved in all of the world's day-to-day activities and knows and guides the events of your daily life? Men 77%, women 76%. Okay, you're sensing a pattern here. Hashem loves you. Everything happens to you for the good. Men 74, women 73. And then, you know, Shmiras Shabbos, men 91, women 92. So as you can see, for almost all of these metrics, the differences between men and women were not statistically significant at all. And we asked 10 questions, 5 questions about belief and 5 questions about practices. For all 10 of those, the men and women were always within 1% of each other, and there were no statistically significant differences.
Okay, the last question, I think, is, and maybe just to touch upon it, because I think it really requires a much broader talk about the influence on university it's having on kids, especially with a lot of the anti-Israel stuff on campus. Is university having a big, a bigger impact on kids, pulling them away, pushing them out, whatever terms you want to use, or in general, the influence? I'll regalachat.
Yeah, so I haven't covered that in my surveys, but I'm involved in a group that monitors Israel, that monitors the media, and we respond to anti-Israel bias. And you know, we've definitely seen that. I mean, there's a need to train kids who are going off to college because it's a very hostile environment. It's a very hostile environment. So I haven't studied it, but I think we pretty much all agree that it's a significant problem.
Okay. I want to thank you. Someone was just asking if this Israel. No, this is just the United States of America. I'm working with Dr. Trencher to expand this into Canada to do a survey. As he pointed out right at the beginning, we have 50% greater. I didn't realize that. And it's interesting. We're closer to Europe. Of course, we're a generation closer to Europe. I don't know how much of a difference that makes. We're more traditional society in general. That's Canada. 17, well, in certain ways. What that, you know, 17% here Orthodox versus 12% in America. So hopefully one day we'll expand this surveys into Canada and see any practical differences. And then one day I assume Israel's a whole different world, but that we're not here. But anyway, I want to thank you. Next week, please God, we'll do the most recent survey in finances, money. HaKesef yane et hakol or lo yane et hakol, and how much kesef you need to answer. You need a lot. Too much. Harbe kesef. By the way, I don't know if you're going to talk about how that's impacted on Aliyah. You know, the Olim, people, you know, $100,000 day school bill. You know, I'll go to Israel. I'll move to Israel. I'll save $85,000 on my tuition. So you can talk about that. Okay, please God, we'll see you all next week. This evening is the Parshat HaShavuah Shir, and for better or for worse, I have the honor of giving the Parsha Shir tonight, a rotating shir at 8:30, which means I'm on for a double header because my regular Shir on the Siddur tomorrow at 9 a.m. So we look forward to seeing you. Rabbi Liebtag will be finishing his series on the number 7 this Sunday. Will be the last one in the number for 7. And then we'll be starting a new series probably in a couple of weeks. Within a day or two, we should have pretty much all our series up for quote unquote the winter's month. I think we have some exciting stuff coming up as always. And this Tuesday, I mentioned yesterday, David White, who lives in Israel, excuse me, we'll be giving a talk on the grape revolution or wine, the whole wine industry in Israel. I apologize. I'll go get a drink of water in a minute. Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll see you, please God, all soon. And have a wonderful day. And thank you. And thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Dr. Trencher. Okay. Bye-bye.
Great lecture. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Trencher, can I ask a question quickly? It's Ilana, absolutely, and his wife. I'm sneaking in at the end. I would love to hear your questions and make some comments about your study that you're going to do on singles. I think it's the most important issue facing the Jewish community today. I think we're getting it all wrong. And I would just love to hear what you're doing and give you some questions to think about.
Yeah, this is an idea that I have for the next survey, singles from ages, of all ages, mm-hmm. the issues they face. We're talking about dating among the younger people. We're talking about people in the community feeling connected. We've talked in the past about isolation, interaction. Mm-hmm. This includes divorcees, the issue of agunot.
Right.
Every issue relating to singleness, which varies obviously by age and by people's circumstances.
Yeah.
I suspect it's going to be a very, very long questionnaire, but you know, different people will be answering different questions. So
right,
if you go to my website, nishma research.com, there's a way to contact me. There's a box, contact me. You can send me an email. And when I get to that, I would be happy to reach out to you. As I mentioned, all the questions I ask are from the community. So I'd be happy to reach out to you.
I just have some thinking on the lines of everybody says there are more women than men. I don't see that in childhood. So I think there's something different going on. I don't think that in numbers there's a difference. I think there's more to this. And someone has to get to the bottom of it. I'm sorry.
You're talking about dating? You're talking about
Yeah. When you talk to Shadchanim, they all have long lists of women and no men.
So there actually is some truth to it. There's a book called Date-onomics.
Right.
Date-onomics, which examines two communities, the American Mormon community and the American Orthodox community. And the question is there a mismatch between the numbers of men and women? And the answer for both communities is yes, for different reasons. The reasons are probably not something you'd think of. It's not a huge mismatch, but it is a reality.
But I still think that in elementary school and in high school and in camp, it's much more similar than it suddenly is when they're dating. And I think there's other reasons for that are not, someone has to explore really. But I just think it's not as simple as there are more women than men, and that's why we have a singles problem.
Yeah. To me, there's a lot of ultra choosiness, unrealistic expectations. Misperceptions of self-worth, where people think, you know, look at me, I am like a superior specimen, and I'm not going to settle for this or that. So I think we need some reality in the dating scene.
And I did hear once a theory that because in the Orthodox community we tend to marry, you know, the men are tend to be 3-4 years older, and as the Orthodox community grows, so like. At 21, they're the same amount of men and women. Yeah, 80% of the men get married and 80% of the women. When the women are 24, the 22-year-olds won't go out with them, and they're less 27-year-olds. So
that's the
Hasidic community doesn't have this problem because the men and women are both 18 when they get married.
That's what the book says.
I don't have to read it now.
I think that's a little bit true, but there's still thousands of single men, thousands of single women, and they're not getting together for different reasons than that. So, yeah.
I spoke at my 50 speeches, only one was in a yeshivish environment, and they asked me, what should we do about shidduchim? I said, you know what? At every wedding, there should be tables set up where during the time that they're taking pictures of the couple, after the chuppah, while they're taking pictures, men and women can go to that table and interact with each other. It's in the public.
I agree.
They can meet each other.
Right.
Kids should come to a wedding with a piece of paper with their name and phone number on it, and let them establish some kind of contact.
I totally agree.
And what was their reaction?
I think we need to normalize dating from a much younger age. I think this notion that you can only go out with one person at one time, even though it takes 3 months to set up that date, is crazy. We just have to get people to meet each other much more. Yeah, I totally agree.
The reaction in one word was polite, which basically means they just sat there. And looked
right,
polite.
Of course.
Exactly, no, the rabbis don't allow it.
Reverend Soloveitchik famously met his wife at a wedding. You know, it used to be mixed eating. That was the way. Of course, I agree with what Ilana is saying, 100% right. You know, when people went out, they went out in groups, they met in Bnei Akiva, they meet in camp. But today we, in this, you know, especially more to the right, but even I think in the modern Orthodox world, we have separated the sexes to such an extent that dating is not natural. They don't meet, and it's very beautiful when they meet in a natural environment. Bnei Akiva and C.S. White or leadership seminar doesn't exist anymore, I don't think, but whatever, you know. So, okay. Ilana is giving you important work to do. She'll give you the good questions.
Now I see she has the same name as you. Wonderful.
Yeah, so, okay. All right. Very good. Thank you, everybody. And we look forward to seeing you soon. And, okay, everybody, be well. Thanks a lot.
Very good. So, thank you.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.